Listen to the Venison Podcasting.
RSS. XML. What is that? Who cares? Podcasting? Who are you kidding? You just want a new toy. That's what they told me, but I thought differently. I thought all this cool stuff had value in K-12 education. Welcome to Adventures in Podcasting. My name's Sean Wheeler, and at the time of these podcasts, I'm the director of IMT Services and Training for the Peoria Unified School District. That's Arizona, by the way. These podcasts, well, they're an audio archive of my adventure in bringing RSS and podcasting to the students and community of PUSD. Sit back and enjoy the ride.
Welcome back to Adventures in Podcasting. This is podcast number 105 for March 30th, 2008. And got some news for you. It is late in the evening, but I've been doing some podcasting. Did a little special guest interview I'll be sharing with you later in the show here. And what we want to do is go on through what's been going on the last 2 weeks. As you may have noticed, you did not hear an Adventures in Podcasting last week over the Easter vacation. It was Easter last Sunday. And I took Sunday off in respect to the holiday. And, of course, I was on spring break all this week, so nothing happened in the world of podcasting this week, at least as far as I was concerned, because I was kicking back and chilling. If you notice, Frederica sounded a little bit different. Well, there's a reason for that. The little one had her tonsils taken out on Tuesday, so the fact that I could even get her in front of the microphone was impressive, to say the least. So my hat's off to my little one. She's been doing pretty good this week, although it was kind of odd. She just didn't say much most of the week. So she's feeling a little bit better today. She's talking a little bit more, and that's a good thing. So in the show, like always, got PSD podcasting updates. Got one update there for you. Nothing really new in RSS updates, so we'll just skip on by that. Really not a tool, but an interesting story sent to me by Peggy George. And then finally, in the other items worth mentioning is where I'm going to actually bring in the interview. So the bulk of the show will be in the end of the show, really. And that's the interview with John and Peggy. So I do want to note there is one new feature in the podcast show notes today, and it's an important one. It says news. And basically what I've done is I've set up a new site for Adventures in Podcasting. And as you may or may not realize the last several weeks, I have been shamelessly promoting my new website, my SeanWheeler.name site, and there, of course, I also have my blog as well. And over my vacation here this week, I set up a second WordPress blog for Adventures in Podcasting, and I'm using a WordPress plugin called PodPress. And I was so impressed with this piece of software in WordPress that I actually decided to move my entire podcasting site over. So I'm about 90% moved. In fact, every podcast show, all 104 of them, plus several special shows in between there, are now located on that site. So you can find that at www.seanwheeler.name/AIP. And AIP stands for Adventures in Podcasting, just a little shorter URL for you. And in the show notes in there, I've got the link to the RSS feed, so you can change your subscription in your podcast reader, or your podcast catcher, I should say. And if you are an iTunes user, there is a one-click direct link into iTunes as well. So I will be simul-posting those probably for several more episodes. But I'll give you some heads up on when I'm going to stop putting in the other location. But the idea here is to get everybody moved over and give you some time to get that, your podcast aggregator transitioned over. So, and of course, I'd love to hear some comments and feedback on that. So if you get an opportunity, shoot me a note, and I'd love to hear about that. So with that said, I think I'm going to do the transition tune. We'll get Frederick in here when she could actually speak to sing us a song. And I'll be right back.
You get the best of both friends.
Alrighty, with PUSD and podcasting updates, the major update I have to give you from the past 2 weeks, again, obviously I was off this week, the Superintendent's Community Podcast is now online, and I'm actually really pleased with the way this turned out. Went ahead and took advantage of the fact that we have some other technologies available to us when we created this. In fact, the audio is stripped out of a video, so this is actually done as a video cast per se. And we've got this posted on the superintendent's page on the website, and there, of course, is a link in the show notes. But laying over in the side, you can actually play it. There's an MPEG player right there, and if you have Internet Explorer, it runs really well. It does not work worth a darn in Firefox or Safari, I don't believe. I haven't tried it in Safari, but I know it does not work in Firefox. But if you are running IE, you can play it right there in the browser. Of course, you can also subscribe to the audio podcast, or you could subscribe to the video podcast. So we've got that displayed as on the page to play, or as available as download. And, of course, you can click to subscribe to that in your podcast catcher or your iTunes, either way. And I think that's kind of cool. So I'm very excited to see that finally come online. And you know, when we actually posted on the podcast server, I needed the show notes for that, and that's what I was waiting on Jim to get back to me. So that went live last week, actually the week before last, and I just kind of held off on it till this week to talk about it for, you know, obvious reasons. So that was very cool, and I'm hoping that'll be the push for a lot of good things to happen in the future with podcasting in the district. So cool stuff there, and I appreciate Dr. Santarelli for making that happen. And I guess the next thing I want to talk about, I'm going to skip on by the next item on the list, which is RSS updates, because obviously I have not done much with that. Why not? I was off work. And other things are going on. So at any rate, we'll go into RSS and podcasting tools. Just let me double-check the time here. So we'll call that 6 minutes and 30 seconds. And what I've got here is an email that Peggy sent me. This is actually a blog post from Scott Floyd's EduBlogs. And she writes to me and says, this is a cool use of a digital recorder. You'll get a kick out of this. What an awesome way to use a digital recorder with kids for storytelling. I can just imagine Frederica doing something like this. Scott explains how this came about on a camping trip with his 4-year-old. And the blog post is really interesting to read, and really unique, because he basically traded out a hammer for an audio recorder for his son, and then after his son carried it around, basically making up a story into the recorder, he sat down with his son and he added some sound effects to this. It's really cute. I think it's about 3 minutes. I listened to it earlier today, and it's one of those things. I think I might have to hand my recorder to my 4-year-old as well when she can start speaking again, and see what she comes up with. I can only imagine. By the same token, I've got an 11-year-old in the other room that I'd love to hear what she would come up with, because I'm sure that would be entertaining as well. So at any rate, give a listen to it, because I think it's going to be I think you'll enjoy it, and it's certainly something that lends itself to what could happen when you put a simple piece of technology in a child's hands like that. So very cool. And of course, you know, from being a parent on that, that's absolutely a cherished moment there. So on that note, I guess it's time to wander on into the last section of the show. So and this is about the time where I do my little shameless self-promotion here. I also need to tell you that the WOW conference is coming up on May 3rd, 2008. That's the AST WOW conference. You can find out more information about that at www.ast.org/conferences.html, or just, you know, hit the website and click the link for conferences. Of course, my new website is out there at seanwheeler.name, and of course my blog is out there at seanwheeler.name/blog. And of course, don't forget the new location of the Adventures in Podcasting page, which is at seanwheeler.name/AIP for Adventures in Podcasting. So before I say goodbye to you, I want to share with you probably the best part of this show, and probably the best part of Adventures in Podcasting in a very, very long time. And that is an interview that took place earlier tonight, and that was with John Evans and Peggy George. We had a nice Skype interview after we got through about the first 30 minutes of technical difficulties where I discovered that I was having some challenges. So I downloaded a different piece of software called Pamela, and Pamela is a piece of software that allows you to record basically your Skype conversation. So I had to do an upgrade of my Skype software so I could do conference calls, which worked out very well, by the way. And then I had to install Pamela and get that configured and make that work. And, you know, like I said, we had very good conversations in there. In fact, we had a little over an hour's worth of conversation. The only thing I will preface this before I start that recording in there is it sounded really good in the microphone from my point of view when we were having the conversation. Unfortunately, I learned after the fact that I was much too close to the microphone when I was speaking. So that's the way I come through. John and Peggy come through very well in the entire recording. Unfortunately, mine's a little bit crummy, but nonetheless, the good information came from those two, not me. So great interview in there with both of them, and I think this is something we're actually going to hopefully be able to do more often. So enjoy that. That is probably the best part. Well, I wouldn't say probably. That is most definitely the best part of this show. So I will say goodbye for now. I'll be back to close the show out in a little while, but this is the beginning of our first ever Skype recording on Adventures in Podcasting, so I'll be back. All right, folks, we've got something very new and different today on Adventures in Podcasting, and I believe this is the first time we've ever done a live Skype recording that we were going to use in a podcast. So online with me, I've got Peggy George. You heard me talk of my my personal researcher for Adventures in Podcasting. Say hi, Peggy.
Well, howdy, everyone.
And from up north in the cold country, I was bragging to him that I have my air conditioner running, is Mr. John Evans from Canada. And you want to tell us folks in the southern land where you're from, John?
Hi, it's John Evans from beautiful downtown St. Francois Xavier, about 30 minutes outside Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is the capital heartbeat of the beautiful province of Manitoba, right in the middle of Canada. And for those of you in Arizona, Canada is above the United States, and Manitoba is just above North Dakota.
Got it. And the weather? I love it.
The weather, well, we had 3 inches of slush last night. Driving into church this morning was horrendous. The highways were closed from a town about 60 kilometers or 60, I guess 80 miles away from us to the next province. And they had a foot of snow and blizzard-like conditions out there overnight. So, and this afternoon, it all melted away, at least out our way.
Now that's the way it was where I went to college. You know, you'd have a blizzard, and then the sun would come out the next day, and it'd be absolutely beautiful.
So, well, it's beautiful, but it wasn't necessarily. It's not spring yet, even though it's spring in the calendars.
Well, it's spring here. I don't want to get this 80 today. It's hot. So yeah. Well, this is the time of year we actually like to live in Phoenix. You know, another month we'll be whining about it again. So.
Somebody was telling me that in another month the house prices in Phoenix go really down. Nobody wants to live there at that time.
Oddly enough, you know, believe it or not, the best time and to be a real estate agent in this town is in the summertime because people are moving. And it's just unbelievable that people will move in this heat, but that's when they tend to do it because kids are out of school. So.
Okay.
But I let my real estate license go years ago because I don't like that business. It's a dog-eat-dog world, so. So, hey, while we've got you on the line, we can kind of have an interesting history lesson. Before we started recording for this, John and I were talking about how we actually met, and we think we met through Terry and the
Coming of Age booklet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I forgot the name of that. and I got to give Peggy credit for letting Terry know that I was even ever in existence too. So it's just an interesting way everything pushes together. So. But well, John, you had
go a ahead. Funny story about how I met Terry.
Well, lay it on us.
I was at the Boston Alan November's conference in Boston in 2006, I guess. No, 2005.
Yeah.
And had been going out in the mornings and working out, and then I guess the last day of the conference, I had a workout and then went in the hot tub, and lo and behold, I introduced myself to Terry, and how we managed to exchange emails back and forth. And keep them, I don't know, but I ended up sending him a paper on RSS that I had written for a class I was taking in university because he had mentioned he did a newsletter. I thought, well, hey, if you can use this, all power to you, go right ahead or don't. And he emailed me back and said, man, I was going to spend the whole weekend writing this thing. Can I use it in this book I'm doing? And well, then the rest is history from there. So, yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it's a small world. No, if Terry and I were sitting in a hot tub right now, we probably wouldn't recognize each other.
Well, we actually got to meet Terry live out here, and I think Peggy's met up with him one other time since then. But when he went out to NEC in San Diego, he flew over and spent a couple of days with us, and it was kind of ironic.
I remember meeting that on there, and I think, didn't you have a podcast on it? He was a
guest Yeah. Well, we actually were in his hotel room, and we set the microphone down, and we had probably 25 things to talk about. Yes. I think we burned 90 minutes and talked about five.
Yeah.
I still have the list of things, topics to talk about, but we had a good time, and it was really funny as we were talking about, you know, how safety, online safety of students, and it dawned on us in the middle of the conversation that we had done everything that we say never, ever do when we're talking to kids about this stuff. So it's just kind of interesting. So,
yeah.
And I guess I met Terry through Peggy because she apparently you sent him a note about my podcast or something, Peg?
Yes, I had been a subscriber of his several of his publications, and I knew that Coming of Age was coming out, and he asked me to write a chapter for it. And at the time, I thought, I know someone who could do a much better job writing that chapter than I could, and told him about you, and then kind of got you together that way. And you did an awesome job.
Thank you. That was the coolest thing because he posted a link to my podcast site on his blog, and I watched the hits go up on my website after that, and just it absolutely blew my mind the way that was going.
Yes.
And just amazing. So it was very cool, and that's when all of a sudden I started catching emails from other people around the world, and
right.
You know, here we are 2 years later, you know, the rest is history. So, you know, back from my modest days of my my headset
microphone.
Yeah, well, and I'd sit there with my headset microphone and record, and I'm sitting here with the earphones on and the microphone and the mixer, and then, you know, I had to get silly about all that stuff. But it was fun.
It's toys, right? It's all about the toys.
It's all about the toys. I can't afford to buy a new computer because I put everything into podcasting the last 4 or 5 years, so... But,
well,
know.
You've helped me a great deal in my endeavors with podcasting because when we first started exchanging emails and I started listening to your podcast, you were at that time, I think, using an Olympus digital recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out and bought one, and it was the best thing since that I've ever gotten.
Yes.
They're great.
That's what I use too, still.
I think it's a wonderful tool, and you know, I don't do my regular show in that, but if I'm going out to do other things or I want to capture a recording, that is just super, super slick, especially for the cost of it. You know, there are some nicer devices out there, but you also pay a much, much nicer price for those too. So,
well, it's interesting. Once I had that, then watching the news and seeing either a sportscast or something like that interviewing somebody. All the hands are going forward, and 3 out of 5 of them were all using Olympus recorders. So it was
a statement of
endorsement. So, hey, I have one of those, and they work.
For $39.95, it works very well, too.
Mine wasn't quite that cheap, but it was certainly a worthwhile investment.
I think I bought the $59 one. It did 16 hours, and then the new ones are running almost 40 hours of recording time. It's amazing what they do. So, but... My wife has one that she uses in her classroom, and you know, I have one. I take it into meetings with me now just to make sure we've got a record of something that's going on. That's the most interesting thing, is you lay that down in the middle of the table and say, by the way, folks, I'm recording this, and you know, everybody just kind of tenses up. It's like, well, you know, everyone has amnesia. What happened? Let's have a recording of it. So. So, John, tell us what you did with podcasting from your early on and right up until you moved. Are you still using podcasting and so forth?
Well, I'm not yet right now, but I've got all sorts of things going around in my head about podcasting that to get a show going that I've thought about for a long time. But I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But what I originally started with after listening to you and what you had done with your podcast, I thought, hey, I could do the same sort of thing with my kids and record some of this information and get it up on the net for parents to listen to. So it would be authentic information to pass on to parents, and the kids just loved it. So I started with a Dell Axum, my Palm Pilot that I had at the time, and recorded some conversations on that we had done when we were out doing a field trip at a local marsh, and got 3 or 4 students to record their thoughts, and then learned how to use Audacity and cut and paste it and put the stuff together, and thought, well, this was great. Put it up on the net using podomatic.com. And then I sort of stalled and went, well, that was a lot of work, but it didn't get me much further on. And then I was walking through our computer lab in the afternoon, and my grade one teacher, Heather Fossey, was printing out some pictures of our local community. And I asked her what she was doing with them. And she said, well, I'm putting together a booklet for the students in grade one. They've each written written a page about an area in our community, the local store, the veterinary clinic, etc., and putting this booklet together. And I said, oh, could I have them read that and put it together as a podcast? She said, what's a podcast? So I explained it to her, and she said, great. And sent a note home to the parents and asked them for their permission. And I guess over the course of 10 days in June, we recorded it all, and I put it all together, and the kids just did a great job with it. And it's up on the net still, and parents are listening to it, and people go and listen to it. And it was, I mean, I think of how good it sounds and how little it costs to produce it, and that just proved to me that podcasting can be a really tremendous tool in the classroom. So subsequent to that, so here we're talking maybe June 7th or 8th. Now, we still have school in June. And I was doing a course on the first ever course that was done in our summer workshops on Web 2.0 tools, and thought, well, I can do a podcasting section. And so I put a podcasting workshop together, and I think we had corresponded a little bit that at the time as well. And
yeah, didn't you put together a real cool wiki site on that as well?
Yeah, I still have my wiki running. Got tons of hits on that still, and okay. It's been a lot of fun. I did the session 2 years in a row, and then worked through training our teachers in our school division with some ideas about podcasting, other Web 2.0 tools, and it's been a fun ride, to tell you.
Now, so, that's the part I really want to talk to you about, and I apologize for the booming. Frederica's joined me here, so she's coloring on my desk. So we're also at about 13 and a half minutes, so we may disappear, but we may have to restart this. But what I'm curious about is, you said you started that with your teachers, so what I would really be curious to know is how many teachers you actually got going on that, and how did you get that started?
Well, that's the part that didn't get to be as successful as I wanted it to be. I basically did all the technology work with them. In the background, they did the audio with me and the students, and never really got anybody else was keen on jumping in and helping out with that and taking it on themselves. It was one of those things that I wanted to do and wanted to do and wanted to do, and just being the administrator of the school and the technology person, it was one of those things that didn't get got to. And so what I had done is I wanted to do something with podcasting, but didn't want to take them through. We didn't have enough time in the workshop series that we're going to take them through a full day of an application podcasting. So what I did was I looked at VoiceThread as an alternative, because VoiceThread does have the podcasting activity and ability there. And it really worked well. Teachers were really, really impressed with that. So I'm not sure how many of them are, you know, since I've left, I haven't followed up on what they're doing with that. But I'm still really impressed with VoiceThread and would like to do more work with that in the future. But that's certainly a use for the headphone microphones, the recording audio, doing the digital storytelling.
I know Peggy's a big fan of that.
I am, and I think that was a wonderful way to sort of transition them into thinking they could do a podcast, because it's much more manageable, and it's, you know, all right there and very easy for the kids to do. And so the teachers aren't as afraid of it, and it's very, very powerful.
Breaking up a wee bit here.
A little bit. I was looking at VoiceThread too. I was going to pull that up and take a peek at it while we talk too.
You're
so
pushing your luck.
Yeah, I'm pushing it. Well, and that's what you said there, John. It makes me feel better to some extent, because it's the same challenges. I come across folks, and I've had a lot of people in the classes over the years that seem to be really, really excited, but when they walk out of the room, you know, the truth of the matter is they've got to go back and teach. And And that starts to make a big difference. The other thing that I've started to look at lately is we started to do a conversion from Blackboard to Moodle, and I was looking at some of the stuff that we've got created. I thought, wow, here's a perfect example for audio. And so I kind of went back and talked to some of the folks that are heading that up and showed them a couple examples of where an audio track would be huge. And a couple of them were literally listed as PowerPoint lectures with no lecture, just bullet points. And I showed them one that I had created a month or two ago, where I had taken that PowerPoint and dumped it into Movie Maker and added the audio and shot it back out as a video. And, you know, those things are, I guess the biggest thing, if we could get folks to understand, if we quit working so hard from a standpoint of you and me and Peggy are all doing the exact same thing in our classrooms, and we're all reinventing the wheel each time, rather than why don't the three of us sit down and say, okay, you do point A, I'll do point B, and you do point C, and we'd probably save ourselves a lot of time and have a whole lot more fun in the process of it.
Well, that's the whole aspect of collaboration that makes it so so interesting and so enticing, I think, for students to get involved and to be able to work on a project with either the student who sits two rows across from them, or the student in the classroom down the hall, or a student across the world. To be able to collaborate makes things a whole lot better.
Now, how was your community with the podcasting? How did you get that word out to the parents? Did you have to explain to them what an aggregator was and all those good things? Or
I basically shared with them the information of what a podcast was in a short, two page letter, I guess. Told them the web address and that it would be posted on our wiki, because I had developed not only my wiki for my technology stuff, but I switched my school website over to a wiki, and
really,
it's still running. It's actually one of the I was surprised hosted it on PB Wiki, and they actually use it as an example of educational uses in their literature for the wiki product. So, anyways, that's where we hosted it, and it's still up there. So anybody wants to go see, the kids who want to go see can go pull it down and listen to those aspects. And I was doing the just before I left, I was doing some VoiceThread stuff with students and doing some, of course, some PowerPoint with them. This is a grade 4 group, and as I started to do the VoiceThreads with them, I started to realize that I was doing some inappropriate stuff with copyright as far as images and things. So I had to be much more cautious about what we posted in that. It's one thing to be able to put up audio. As soon as you start putting up images that are so easily pulled down from, you know, the Google image search, became much more of an issue for me. So I actually didn't post any of them to the net, and would now have a lot more sources for free images free.
Now, did you get a rude awakening to find out about your copyright problem, or did it just dawn on
you? I was
one day
thinking, hey, here I'm going along here, we're using this stuff, and then I started doing some research, and I'd always been interested in copyright and wanted to apply this stuff with our students. And of course, our Canadian copyright laws are so different from the American copyright laws, whereas you can use 10% of stuff and use you know, and things like that. Our copyright laws don't allow that kind of stuff. It has to be really expressly stated. So it's
really? So there's no such thing as fair use?
Well, we have fair dealing is what it's called, but it doesn't have the same attitude that you folks have as far as the for example, the video aspects. That's been a relearning process and an education for me, and we're starting to do that through our provincial workshops with teachers too. And for them, it's a huge undertaking as well, because they're thinking, you know, everything I read on the net seems to come from the U.S. and they have this. You can use certain amounts of different things. you know, can't do that in Canada. Well, no, the laws are a little bit different, so it's been interesting to be.
Wow, I never thought that, but that, you know, that's a typical American attitude. Just expect everybody does what we do. So,
well, you know, we started using more and more Creative Commons stuff, and even Creative Commons licenses are different from country to country. So, A lot of similarities, but a lot of really good stuff has come out of this. So I've got a bunch of on my technology wiki. I've got a lot of links to free images and free video sources and things like that. So it's been.
Do you mind sharing that address?
Yeah, the wiki site for my technology is joevans.pbwiki.com, and that'll take you to my literacy with ICT Imium tutorials wiki.
Okay. Cool. Put that in the show notes.
I've got pages on there for just about every Web 2.0 tool that's come up lately.
Yes, I have to give a huge shout out to you, John, about your Wikispace, because I get some of my best resources from your site. You're always just right on top of something new that's come out with your experience with it or your recommendations about it, and it's just a fantastic resource, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I think you're talking about my blog as well. So
It could be your blog.
They're both called the same thing, so it's
that's what
it
I was
confused.
Thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I caught your comment a little while ago on one of my Twitter video that I'd listed up there, and I appreciated that, Peggy. It's really always nice to get a comment. It's not often you do.
It is. You don't often, but it is.
What's the address for your blog, too, John? I've got it in my RSS feed, but I'll put it in the show notes right now.
I have to look it up because I never type the address.
That's okay. I'll find it.
I'll get it for you right away. It's coming up here.
I'll Google you.
Yeah. If you Google it, it's John Evans will usually find some, but it's Imium Tutorials. Here's the address. It's http://nlcommunities.com/communities/joevans.
All righty.
And either, if you Google it, it's either IMYM tutorials, literacy with ICT. That'll get it coming up as well.
Cool. I got you. That was actually easier to Google you.
Yeah. It is. That's why I never write it down. Just Google me.
Yeah, I remember Terry saying that one time. He says, "Oh, just Google me. You can find me." I said, "I want that to happen." That's also scary.
It's always interesting to Google yourself to find out what's there.
Yeah, it's also interesting to people that track you down after years. So that's kind of scary. So at least I don't owe money to anybody.
So. John, your comments about your podcasting experience and trying to get teachers started with that really made a strong point with me, because it seems to me there are two issues there. One is getting them feeling comfortable enough with the how to do it, and the other is to figure out what in the world they have that is worth podcasting, you know, and really
exactly.
Thinking about that, you know. And if they don't have something that they really feel like is worth taking the time to do it for, I think they tend to not do it, you know. And that's where I think some of the things both of you have done in terms of making suggestions of things that would be great to do on podcasts and things that are very easy to do, like what you did with recording the students telling their stories. Then make it seem more manageable to the teachers, and they'll get so much positive feedback from their parents and from the kids who love doing it, you know, once they feel like they have a purpose about it, you know. And it doesn't have to be a huge purpose, you know, just a meaningful one.
Right. It's all about that finding your voice.
It is.
And what everybody has something to say, and it's amazing when they find that what their passion is.
Yes.
What it is they can get across to other people, because there's a lot of people who are looking for ideas and how to do things in your classrooms, how to do things with technology, how to work technology into your curriculum areas, and podcasting is a pretty natural fit.
Yes, it is.
on the wiki, I've got a, I did a presentation about podcasting across the curriculum and gave some ideas about, it's just a PowerPoint, but it's up there if anybody wants to use it. And it's amazing. Not only the podcasting, but the pod catching aspect and being able to pull things in for your students.
Yes.
The history stories, I mean, if you're studying old time radio, I mean, I'm a great fan of Sherlock Holmes and, the old time radio stories, like that, and great stuff that's on there. And it's a great uses in curriculum for sure.
And I got to tell you, that's the one thing that has really struck me as I've listened to some of the older radio shows periodically. And I try to remind people, it's kind of fun to try to remind somebody that never heard a radio program and, you know, grew up with TV their entire life and grew up with cable their entire life, to say that, you know, at one point in time we put a lot of information across on the radio and we allowed our imaginations to work and so mm-hmm. forth. So, you know, this is it's the same old thing. You know, people start hearing about the podcasting and they immediately want to go to video. And I've pushed back quite a bit just trying to keep people, you know, don't get into the video because you make it too complex. And we've been able to do video for years, and it makes a very complicated feature of doing any of the recording in there.
I'm just sorry, John.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm just sorry that this technology wasn't in place when I was a principal. Because I remember back to those weeks where every week I did a hotline message to the parents in my community, and I had to record it on the phone and they had to call in to listen to it. And it would have been so much more efficient and more useful if I had a podcast. But we didn't do that then.
Push technology versus pull technology.
Exactly.
Well, there's so many new Web 2.0 tools that are out there for doing podcasts, like
yes.
that I haven't even investigated. I've heard of, like, Gabcast for one, that where you make your podcast from your cell phone. And I know of teachers who, as they're leaving from school and they're posting the day's homework on their podcast for their parents
yes.
and students to check as they're driving out of the parking lot.
I mean, that sounds similar to GCast as well.
Yeah. Can't get any simpler than that if that's the tool you want to use.
And
now
you can do it on Jot. I've been trying to talk Sean into trying Jot to use it.
Gabcast?
I think it's Gab. It might be GCast. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure if there's a Gabcast.
There's a Gabcast. Yeah, there's a Gab. News to me, I did not know about this, so I'll add this to the show notes. And Peggy's is Jot.
Yep, J-O-T-T.
J-O-T-T. And you actually had me looking at this one time before
yes,
as well. Yeah. Yeah, this is the one you told me to, it emails it to you, is that what it does?
Yes, it will email it in text to you.
It'll email it in text?
Yep.
Like that would be impressive.
As a text message on your phone?
Or on your email. You can get it either way, and you get the audio, too.
Right. Wow.
Now think about that. If you could figure out a way to run I don't know, whatever you needed to say, if it was going to give both the text and the audio,
mm-hmm.
that is huge.
Yes, it is.
Well, the really neat thing, I think with that is if you can do both text and audio and you can push it out as a text
mm-hmm.
file,
mm-hmm.
just let your parents know about this. Everybody's got a cell phone. They hook up with their cell phone and, oh, here, look, what's Johnny's homework tonight? Or
exactly.
what's the upcoming plans for the school this week? You know, ooh,
yes.
I have cookies to make tomorrow. That sort of stuff can be so easy because cell phones are such a part of our life.
Oh, absolutely. I know if I was back in the classroom today, the first thing I'd do is hook up a GCast account to my classroom, and you know, I think I'd just subscribe all my parents into it. And I can't think of a better way to get a hold of mom and dad is through that, you know, that ability, because it can email you. I would imagine most of these do the same thing too. So that's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And now you can use phones to record your message on VoiceThread too.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
That?
Mm-hmm, that's it.
We're just learning. See, this is why we need to do these. We learn all sorts of cool stuff.
There's a great podcast from the K-12 Online Conference. A lady by the name of Liz Kolb, K-O-L-B, did a wonderful podcast on using cell phones in the classroom and comes up with a lot of these ideas in there as well. It's something to search for.
She has a blog talking about that, definitely. We'll put that in the show notes.
Okay.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, send that to me. I'll make sure that gets in there. That's an interesting thing because there's a lot of, I guess a proper word would be anxiety about the cell phones in the classroom. And especially with, I don't think you can buy a cell phone that doesn't have a camera today. So that's caused a whole realm of concerns from taking pictures of the test to taking naughty pictures just in general. So all sorts of fun stuff going on with that.
That Liz's blog is cellphonesinlearning.com.
Cellphonesinlearning.com. The toy to a tool. Hey, now, I had a presentation named that one time. Very cool. I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Yes.
Jonna, how did you use RSS with your school?
What I had done, I had all the teachers create a blog, and we had people subscribing to their blogs via RSS. Yeah, I'm not sure how successful that was. I know that I taught a number of classes for teachers and administrators on the use of RSS, and they really saw the benefits of being able to, you know, sign up a BlogLines account or a Google Reader account and follow certain individuals to get your reading. I think RSS is probably one of the best things that ever happened to my professional life because of the instantaneous learning that takes place when I go on there and I can read, you know, people like Darren Kirkpatrick's blog or Will Richardson's blog or Clarence Fisher. And these are all people that you know, live a great deal of distance away from me. Darren doesn't. He's not far away. But what they have to say is so meaningful and so influential in what's going on in technology and schools that I would never have found that before. And being able to pass that kind of information on to a teacher or to be able just to synthesize that sort of stuff and be able to chat about it with folks like you, it's just been so beneficial to what I've done and what I've been able to do with teachers and students and in schools in our school district. It's been really beneficial.
Now, where you're working as a principal, did you have a lot of opportunity to show this to other administrators? Or how did they react to that?
Oh, that was one of the first things I brought back from Boston, I guess, in 2005 in the fall, was showing them how to use RSS feeds and how they can subscribe to the tool we used at the time was BlogLines. They really saw a benefit to it. And one of the neat things about it is that now that I mentioned that my school website was a wiki, we have, I think it's 5 of the 8 schools in our school division are wiki sites now. Their websites are wiki sites. And you can subscribe via RSS to the wiki site. So anytime the principal or anybody updates the wiki site, well, as an administrator, you can find out about it. But also parents can find out, too, if there's more information coming out there to go see, rather than, again, let's go check and see if Mr. Evans changed anything on the website. Oh, it's been the same for 2 weeks. Oh, look, he's got something up. It comes in my email. That sort of thing. But it's been very beneficial.
Now, you said there's 5 of them doing that now. How long did that that was now. So did that take, that's over the course of the last 3 years for that to happen? Or did that happen fairly quickly?
It was last, when I switched mine over, was last, I guess, 2006, the winter of 2006. And 2006-2007 school year is when the big adoption of wikis took place in our school division, with lots and lots of teachers building classroom wikis and lots of principals taking that on. Most of the schools are listed on my my podcasting, or pardon me, on my wiki page, on the wiki itself. So I can send you those links if you want to have a look at them.
Absolutely. And did you have any concerns, or did you have any, I guess vandalism would be the word to use for that, or anybody misbehaving, inappropriate things online or anything like that?
Well, one of the things that happened when I first started using wikis with my grade four class was I used the free version, and we were doing, I used it as a summative activity where the kids had to write two sentences about something they've learned, and one sentence about something they'd like to learn about rocks and minerals, was what we were studying on our Rockhound wiki. And the kids just took to it very easily. Within about the keeners in the class, and this is a grade four group, within 5 minutes had finished writing their sentences, and I said, now what can I do? So I showed them how to put links on, and they added that, and then they became teachers of all the rest of the kids.
Awesome.
The kids went home that weekend and had a great time with it, until Sunday night I got a phone call from one of the parents, and they said that you have to see what's on the wiki. I hadn't subscribed to the RSS on it yet, figuring that these guys were so innocent. Well, one little guy went in and put some inappropriate stuff on there, and we caught him dead to rights, and you know, he received his punishment for it. But it was also a big eye opener for me, in that having the free wiki is you do have to teach your kids a lot about digital citizenship before you go in. I've done some, but obviously not enough. So I then switched over to a commercial version, and I think for $100 a year. It gave me password protection, and teachers could have a level of password protection. I could have a master level of password protection, and the students could enter material. And now, with the beauty of RSS, and once the students have a wiki page, or they're entering anything on a wiki page, the teacher just subscribes to that, and they know if anything goes up real quick. They don't have to keep looking at the pages to see what's going up there as well. So.
And that's the part that I get the most pushback from administration anytime we bring up blogging or wikis in the classroom, is there's always a concern about if they do something inappropriate. And the other challenge we have is there's a concern that if it's posted somewhere where we don't actually own a machine, where it can't go out and unplug it. So yeah, I guess that would be a question back to you. Did you ever have any trouble once you were paying for that service with shutting a student's account off, or getting into that information, make sure it's down?
Because it was all controlled by the wiki administrator, which was me.
Okay.
So you gave them information there, you could just change their password, and they were locked out.
What service did you use?
I use PBWiki. And I know lots
they have
of teachers.
They teachers. Have a paid version for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Free version is good, but the paid version is has far more layers to it, and WikiSpaces is another good wiki tool. I think it has a paid version as well. Most teachers use the freebie.
Yeah, well, I like the user interface in PBWiki. I prefer it over WikiSpaces, but the free version of PB only ever, well, at least the last time I messed with it, it only had one password for the entire page.
And it only has 10 megs of space as well to store stuff, where your wiki storage space on WikiSpaces is significantly greater.
Yeah.
But once again, it only has the one wiki password as well.
Right. But
so when I went to the commercial version of PBWiki, the ability to have to set password levels at several different areas was greatly something that I needed to have, and the transition has been smooth since.
And now that you've left that job, are they continuing on with that, or
yeah,
or
they are. I'm still, you know, giving them some tutorial advice on that and some coaching on that. But there'll be a new administrator hired in the fall, or in, I guess in June, and I'll be doing some consult with him or her, and I hope that it's going to continue to go. It's a great tool. Showed some parents how to use a wiki, Of course, we've gone off topic completely here.
Actually, no. I mean, this is just fine because it's all part of the, you know, all this intermingles together quite a bit. So it's I personally feel it's important that we all have a better understanding. And, you know, while I typically talk about podcasting and RSS, all of this is still communication. And I think that's the big important part here.
Well, as I was saying, I showed our parents our school wiki, and one of the parents on our parent advisory committee also happened to be the chair of the local hockey rink and community club. So he went off, and I guess I showed him in a half an hour some of the basic tools of how to use a wiki, and he has created their website based on a free wiki, and it's just phenomenal. But it's just a little bit of ingenuity and a little bit of okay, here's my voice, as I mentioned before. Here's how I'm going to get my message across. And it's really been very popular. And doesn't take any kind of skill like it would be a website to maintain.
And that's the part that's huge. I know I talked about this last year when we were planning a vacation with five families, and the emails were going haywire. And just trying to keep track of it and who said what and where this was, and you lost it. I finally put together a PB wiki for that trip, and you know, basically that crew, I love them to death, but you know, hitting reply all was a major task for most of them. And I set the wiki page up, I sent them the password, and I sent them a link to Creative Commons or Creative Common Craft show about
right,
wikis.
Right, Lefevre's, yeah. Well, you could have been the model show, because that's what his video is about, how to set up a wiki for a camping trip.
Yes.
that's why it was so unique. I watched that. I thought, oh, this is perfect. And that's basically what got me to go set that up. And
yeah,
you know, the next time, in fact, we never spoke to each other until we were standing in my buddy's driveway the day we were leaving town.
Wow.
That was the first time we all actually had a conversation with, you know, all 20 people that were going on that trip. So it was amazing. So that turned out to be a really, really good way to do that.
Well, there's so many areas. The neat thing about using a wiki or a blog is the ready access that the teacher has. Now, in some school divisions, that's obviously a really big concern, because they want to be able to hold tight to the control of what goes out with any kind of label from the school division on it. So there has to be a lot of communication between the parties involved, both administration, the teacher, and the technology people, in order to give that the okay to happen, because it has its potential, but you can either block everything and try and screen everything for your kids at school to protect them from the ills that are out there on the internet, and when they go home, it's wide open to them. So why not teach them the proper tools and the proper digital citizenship skills while they're in your care at school, so they can use those tools that you have appropriately, and then that information will be passed on to them when they go, hopefully, home and use those skills on an unfiltered environment. Because there's so much we can block, but once you start blocking, you realize that, hey, sometimes I might just be able to turn the machine on and not be able to use it because there's nothing out there for me to get.
That's exactly right.
did that whole speech sound real, real familiar to you, Peggy?
Yes, the baby with the bathwater. Throw him out.
Yes.
That's a conversation I've had with Peggy maybe 50 times. We could probably go on a roadshow on that one, John. I am so tired of web filters right now, and it just, you know, I get part of my job is to actually choose what's blocked and what's unblocked based on requests of the teachers. And, you know, some of the things I see blocked, I just shake my head on. I don't understand why they're blocked. Well, I understand why it's based on a grouping, but, you know, I'm getting to the point where just unplug the things, and exactly what you said, teach them to, you know, use appropriate behaviors in appropriate places and move on from there. Because, you know, you hit a good point. If we don't teach them to behave when they're supposed to be behaving, I don't think we're doing anybody any favors here.
Well, I mean, it's like the talk on cyberbullying.
Yes.
Cyberbullying takes place, but cyberbullying is just basically bullying that occurs on a computer. There's bullying that occurs on the playground. We don't take the playground away.
Mm-hmm.
We show them how to coexist on the playground. So My understanding is you should be able to do the same sort of thing for teaching students how to use technology.
And that would make sense, but we sure have a lot of folks that tend to think if there's a way to use technology to disallow somebody from behaving badly, we should be doing that, and that's an unfortunate thing.
Yes, I've heard often about the point about technology should not be your classroom management tool.
Exactly. And the other side of that is, interestingly enough, my background in teaching started out to be shop teacher. And so, we actually took several classes in lab management, and which was different from classroom management. In the teacher college, we had classroom management, but in the vocational setting, you actually had lab management. When you're running tools that can dismember you, you have a whole different way of looking at the room. And, I've heard complaint after complaint from people about the things that go on in a lab setting. And, the one question I've always asked the people who are doing the complaining and the other administrators are, what are we doing to help the teachers understand what lab management is?
Mm-hmm.
And I always get a funny look. And, there's a big difference between managing your classroom versus managing something where the students can get themselves in a world of trouble quickly and get you in a world of trouble if you're the person who's supposed to be responsible for that particular setting.
Mm-hmm.
And Peg, you're the closest one out of the university. Are we touching that in any way, or?
Oh yes, but what I found frequently was the students at the university ended up in schools where they didn't have the same technology access and the freedom to make any of those decisions, and they were frustrated about using technology.
I mean, they just didn't have the technology in the schools, or all the blocking?
Both.
Interesting.
Both. Yeah.
How about up in your neck of the woods, John?
It's starting. It's slowly starting. Sometimes things have changed at universities. A professor of mine once told me things change at the university level one death at a time. It's unfortunate, but that may be true, more true than I'd like to think about it. But it's starting, and we're starting to actually. My colleagues are starting to put time in at the university to speak to faculty, and faculty professors are starting to call us for workshops on our material, which is all about literacy with ICT.
Yes,
and it's starting to happen. I'm seeing more and more things coming that are positive. Some of the classes I've taken have been specifically on that topic. So that's a positive thing to see. So
yes, it is.
I hope it continues, because I know as an administrator, when I was hiring people and you're looking at their technology skills, well, they all say that they can use Word and Excel and all mm-hmm. these different things. But I think the question we asked was the wrong question, because we're not really asking whether they can use the technology in that venue, whether or not they can teach with it, and that's a totally different area.
And that is absolutely true. That's that's one of the things that I deal with in my job, and I talk to these folks that are coming in, and what I've learned is, they can write a paper, and they can throw together a single PowerPoint deck, but as far as being able to use that to teach with, it's an entirely different point of view.
Yeah, unfortunately, the old adage end up teaching the way we were taught sometimes proves more true than we want it to be.
Yeah, and that's not always a good thing. So, hey, I got another question, since I'm talking to two principals here. What would you recommend that we do? Hold on, sweetie. What would you recommend that we do to bring veteran and even rookie principals more into the use of technology in the classroom and in their schools?
Well, I think the first thing is, as an educational leader, in order to be able to lead, you have to have the wherewithal to realize where your shortcomings are. And if your shortcomings happen to be in the technology area, you need to spruce those things up. You need to take some classes to be able to say, I don't know about that. I'd like to learn. One of the things that we did in our admin council is this year is we dedicated 2 hours of every We had full day meetings once a month, 2 hours to principal PD on technology issues. And that proved to be very beneficial. And some of the stuff was as simple as, you know, we're going to show you how to have some fun on the computer. We'll show you how to use tools like Flickr Toys and Glass Giant to how to make some interesting slides for your students and staff. And maybe potentially you might be want to use these with your grandkids or something like that. But it was, like it is with teachers, if you can show them something that they can use personally, they can also use it in their classrooms, and it'll be more, much of an easier sell.
And you did this twice a month, you said?
Well, once a month.
For 2 hours?
Yeah, for 2 hours.
Okay, cool.
And this was our initiative this year to do that. And, principals found it to be very, very, beneficial.
That gives me some food for another thought when I get back to work tomorrow, so that's good to hear. I like that.
I think it's really important that you provide them with the tools and how mm-hmm. to use them for the things that they're wanting to do. They don't want to feel like they're adding one more thing onto their plate because they're already extremely busy. And if that tool that you're showing them helps them to do it and do one of the jobs they're already doing, they're much more likely to use it. I know I felt like my best support as a principal was basically doing home visits with teachers, and they would tell me something they wanted to learn how to do, and I did this with other principals in the district as well, and I would go to them, sit down beside them, and help them learn how to do what it was they wanted to do, and they continued to use it. Because it was what they needed to know when they needed to know it. And then the word spread, you know, and they would come back and show someone else what they'd learned how to do, you know.
So you'd go into their classroom and do that then?
I went into their classrooms and I went into their homes.
Wow. You mean to their home where they lived?
Absolutely. Home visits.
Wow.
I took my little laptop and my carton. We went over and we worked side by side.
That's amazing. That's I didn't know you did that. That is very cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
Do you make road trips, Peggy?
Absolutely. To Canada, no doubt.
You just might want to wait another month or so where it gets real warm down here.
In July.
Yeah. So I had a couple people in Flagstaff ask me one time if I wanted to come up there. I said, it depends on what type of year. You betcha. All righty. Well, we have actually, we're into almost an hour into this. So you guys got any other things we want to talk about in here or shall we?
No, this was great. This is something I'd like to do again.
I would too. Yes. I think this was a lot of fun and a lot of good information came out of this. So this is very, very cool.
Well, I think we need to wrap it up or it will be too long for anyone to listen to.
And that's true. Well, the good news is my show is actually very short this week because, you know, I missed last week because of Easter and I was actually off this week due to spring break. So, you know, my show will be rather short this week. So.
you could edit this down to a couple of shows.
I'll go ahead and put it out there. It's I think it's worth hearing all the way through. So I can tell the world
I'll
about.
I'll look forward to it.
Yeah.
Tell the world
I
about.
I said that. I can't believe it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I like the fact that you know you got some background that I don't have, and you know I was never a building principal. And so you bring to it a different perspective than what I have, and that's important for me to hear. It's also important for me to, you know, you said some things in here that I want to point out to some other folks that, you know, our administrators wondering how to make this work as well. So that's, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, Sean said to do this, but, you know, what does he know? He's never had my job, and that's a true statement. I don't know what it's like to have that job, so makes a world of difference.
There's one other thing I thought of, Sean, and that is that whenever we had any kind of technology training for teachers, I always participated in it with them. And I think that they respected the fact that I wanted to be a learner too, and that I understood what they were being trained in, and that I could support them in it after the training was over. And so I think it's important for principals to do that with their staff.
All right, that's one I'm going to capture as a commercial.
And it's also easier that when the teacher's gone to PD sessions and they come out and the
yes.
principal's been there,
yes.
and they're both on fire for something that, I mean, technology can cost you thousands and thousands of dollars to put in a classroom, or it can cost you nothing. And a lot of the stuff that's being taught out there now is that it costs you nothing. So when you see somebody who may have a passion to do something in their classroom, some technology, and an administrator's been alongside of them, it's an enabler that allows them to, you know, okay, maybe you might need a couple extra preps that I can swing around there.
Exactly.
So you can learn how to do that a little better. You can fine tool some of those things. It's just a spirit of collaboration again, and the support, and knowing that you've got somebody in your corner. It's, hey, I can try this out, and I'm not going to goof up too much. I'm going to have some fun doing it and learn along the way and be better the next time.
Exactly.
All right. There are two killer statements. Those are the two of the best statements I've heard all night long. So that's dynamite.
See, we're on a roll.
We're on a roll.
That's right. The diet book finally kicked in.
Right.
All right.
You didn't have a soda pop break yet.
I know.
No, I didn't. And I've been out of soda pop since we started. So this has been tough. I'm dying here. So
this is a first for Adventures in Podcasting.
Yeah, no soda pop break. So. All righty. Well, I think we definitely ought to do this again. And I think we're about out of time on that. So I'm going to stop the recording on this. So I will say thank you to my two guests, Peggy and John. And I appreciate you joining me here. And I'm going to shut the recording off, and we can chat a little bit more if you like. But this has been a special guest session for Adventures in Podcasting. So thanks again, folks.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Appreciate it.
Peggy.
Alrighty, that wraps up the first ever live interview we had on the Adventures in Podcasting show, and I hope you would agree with me that that was a success. Great conversation with those two folks, and I really enjoyed that. We got through all our technical challenges on that, even with the free version of Pamela where we had to stop and start every 15 minutes. You probably noticed a little oddity every once in a while, and that was that. And obviously, the next time we do this, I need to back away from the microphone a little bit. But all in all, very successful in my opinion. And I'd love to have your opinion. Let me know what you think about having that interview or having that live discussion in there. I thought it was very cool. And, of course, before I say goodbye to you, I do want to remind you one more time that Adventures in Podcasting does have a new site. That's at seanwheeler.name/AIP. Please check out the link. Please change your subscription if you are a subscriber. Well, obviously, you're a subscriber. You're listening to this show. But please go ahead and make sure you get your podcasting link changed in your podcast catcher so you don't miss any of the information coming out of the show. And obviously, at some point in time, I will quit cross-posting. But I did want to let you know that is out there and will be on the way. And so I guess it's time for me to say goodbye. My name is Sean Wheeler, and as always, I welcome your comments and feedback. Please drop me a note. You can reach me. In fact, I'm going to change the email address as well on this. You can reach me at sweeler@seanwheeler.name. So that's sweeler@seanwheeler.name. New website address or new email address for you. So give me a shout on that as well, and just obviously put something about podcasting in the subject line so we make sure we don't miss you in the spam filter. So as always, folks, remember if it's important enough to say to the class, it's important enough for the class to hear it again. Say it again with podcasting. I'm Sean, and I am gone.
Thanks for joining me today. This wraps up another episode of Adventures in Podcasting. On the way out, I just want to thank a few folks who have unknowingly helped me out with this podcast. Intro and exit music courtesy of DePalm, who can be found on PodSafeAudio.com, Audacity Software for their outstanding and free recording software, and finally Steve Banahan for Feed Edit Software, which allows me to create the XML code for this feed. This is Adventures in Podcasting.